This is Jason Kirk, and this is Street Roots Poetry Showcase. Today, we're going to have the lovely Kaya Sands with us. She's the director of Street Roots, a poet, and an artist. So, Kaya, where are you from?
I was born in Alaska, but I grew up in Oregon. So I grew up in Salem, Oregon. Both of my parents were journalists, and we lived in Salem because my father was covering the Capitol. So he actually was a wire service reporter, and he was working in the basement of the Capitol.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So you kind of had something to do with radio, or it's been in your blood, or...
Yeah, I think writing has always felt really necessary.
Yeah.
By growing up with two people who were always talking about the news and language.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, growing up like that, having two kind of intellectual people doing things, it probably shaped who you are as a person.
Yeah, as a poet, I really do see, when I look back on why I ended up moving toward poetry, I think about how my mother would bring me on a lot of her work assignments in lieu of childcare. Yeah. So I remember how she would interview people, and then she would use silence. Like, silence was part of the interview, because she wanted to create the space. And that really affected me, that idea that part of language, part of conversation is silence and space.
Yeah.
And then, and she also took me, she covered a lot of trials. So I would sit by courtroom artists and draw, because they were drawing, you know, the photography wasn't allowed in. Yeah. So that was a way of processing, I think, events. And then my father, because he was working for a wire service, and that was using the internet. It was pre-internet for everyday folks. So the wire service actually was a machine that kind of, click, click, click. It was like a strip of language that just kept rolling from all over the world. And that really got my imagination in terms of language being like this thing. You know, it's like this, it took a physical form. And I've worked with scrolls a lot in art and in poetry. And I feel like it traces back to that idea that it's continuous, almost kind of a infinity.
Yeah, like something working its way back to itself.
Oh, I love that. Something working its way back to itself, but transformed.
Yeah, like, because it took a trip. It didn't stay where it was.
Yeah, I've always been interested in how we don't have to keep producing new things, but time and context changes them.
Yeah.
Like, I'll write a poem, and then I'll think about how years later I might recast it. There's one poem I wrote called Tiny Arctic Ice.
Yeah.
And I've always considered it an unfinished poem, in the sense that I will always add lines to it. And I actually have it.
Oh, would you read it?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's in a nice book, too.
Yeah, this book is A Tale of Magicians Who Puffed Up Money That Lost Its Puff. So the largest part is actually a magic show that I did about the financial collapse. And it kind of had to take when I thought about how do I actually look at this in terms of how it lived on, it just became a part of a poetry book, but it's a script, for a magic show. But this poem is not the magic show. It's called Tiny Arctic Ice. And I should say, the first way I recast this again and again in different material forms. The first way I did this was making a book out of a tea bag and then typing on the tea bag.
Yeah.
And then I've recast it in different forms with I actually wrote it on a wire once.
Yeah.
Inhale, exhale. 7.4 billion people breathing. Some of us in captivity. Our crops far flung. Prison is a place where children sometimes visit. Jetted from Japan, edamame is eaten in England. Airplane air is hard to share. I breathe in what you breathe out, stranger. Tantalum is mined by hand for cell phones. Sometimes children dig it. We send tea leaves to distant friends. Neighbors bike to build RVs at daybreak. Arikana chickens won't lay eggs in captivity. Airplanes of roses lift above Quito mountains. Cultivated from crocuses in La Mancha, saffron suffuses my rice. Women cook circuit boards for gold flecks in Guiyu. You touch what I discard. Status updates stack up in Prineville warehouses. Data coal-powered and far-flung. When fish diminish, folks find jobs in prisons. Sometimes children visit. Crouched on mounds of monitors, boys capture copper with magnets. Airplanes of microchips lift above Cascade Mountains. Terminator seeds are hard to share. Bonfires burn motherboards into Ogboloshi air. Sometimes children breathe it. And the fish diminish, the roses, the tea, the edamame far flung. The roses, the tea, the microchips, and you. You breathe in what I disregard, friend.
That was awesome.
So it's a stacking. You know, I just keep, that's where I feel like it's an infinite poem. What you were saying that I love about things looping back on themselves.
Yeah.
It just keeps going because I'm just gathering evidence as a poet in the world, just stack by stack by stack.
And it's nice to look back at your previous poems because it gives you a snapshot back into yourself and where you were at that point.
And then suddenly...
But yet you've got some growth on top of it, so you're where you're at, but you're taking that look back at yourself in the mirror, maybe.
I love that. I mean, I feel like I really like aging.
Yeah.
Because it's like we just accumulate, you know,
I
our life.
I thought it sucked at first, but now I'm getting into the groove of it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I think it's pretty wonderful, especially going back to your idea of things cycling back on themselves. I'm always amazed when, yeah, there's a sense of this full circle with more awareness and more growth, and sometimes something that really hurt the first time, but then you circle back on it, and you're like, oh, I understand it a little bit differently this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice when you can... see that growth in yourself where you've been at. So you do lots of things. How do you feel about your work?
I think I'm really grateful that I have been able to spend so much time with poetry and art in my life. It's been a beautiful privilege to live in that space so many years. So it informs everything I do in the sense that with poetry and art, we're always dealing with constraints. Like we're dealing with, you know, in poetry, maybe the most conventional way might be to think about it like a sonnet, right? Like there's ways in which we have these limitations on what's possible, but then we don't, in the sense that poetry and art is always transcending the limitations.
Yeah.
So there's always this sense that something much more is possible. I think of it, I don't know, like a radical excess or something, right? Like what spills over, like what's beyond what we even could imagine. So I think everything else I do comes with that poetics.
Yeah.
Like when things feel intractable, what are we not even aware of yet?
Yeah, because you're not going to know until you get there.
Yeah. And you just keep trying. I mean, that's part of it too, right? Like,
yeah.
As an artist, you just do it again, and you don't know quite where you're going to arrive.
Yeah, because you try this thing for a while, and then you try this thing for a while, and pretty soon you try this and that thing together for a while, and then pretty soon you try quite a bit of things, and not all of them work, but or not everybody is going to appreciate everything that you've done, but pretty soon you've built a nice little body of work for yourself.
I love that. Yeah, it's like I love stacks of drafts.
Yeah.
And how material they are. There's one of my favorite poets is this poet, George Oppen. He was also a carpenter, and he would nail physically, like he'd have a board and he'd nail his drafts on top of other drafts.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of like the, I don't know, it's like a fossil record, right?
I have some Nike shoe boxes, and so I'll just drop like my poems in there.
That's really cool. So your poems then are they narrow and long like a shoebox?
Because like a pair of Nike high tops.
So there's a little more space because they're high tops.
Yeah, they're about paper size space.
That's really cool. So it's the high top shape of a poem.
Yeah, because I rip them out of the binder or the notebook, and then I just have blank pages. Like when I was in college, there's this one point where I had like to write 31 one-page papers on different subjects. So I just put each assignment on a sticky note and then stacked them on top of each other, and then when I was done, I just put them on the completed paper. And then I didn't have a long list. I just did them one at a time.
Was it for the same class?
Yeah, it was for my aviation maintenance degree.
That sounds like a poetry assignment. A form of having, how many was it in? 31. 31. Oh, that's like a good cribbage.
Yeah, I missed some hours, so I had to write a paper for every hour that I missed for the FAA, so I could make up that hour.
And I love that you went from your boxes of poetry to that. Like, it does... They connect.
Yeah. Because I can start out with fresh pages again.
Yeah. Your poems have weight.
Yeah, eventually.
Eventually, yeah. I've always loved with... You know, if you change your form, like thinking about that, the blank paper, one after another, and the sticky notes, like, I know that if I change the way I write, the process and the materials, that I'll write differently.
Yeah.
So I embroider a certain amount of my poems. That's my slowest way of writing. And that's a way to write where I'm not redrafting, because it's happening in my head, because it's going so slowly. And then, and the sewing is getting me to my language.
Yeah.
But another way I write poetry is I'll use watercolor, and I'll write in big sheets or in books in watercolor, and that's a faster method, but it's still slow. I guess I play with different speeds and materials.
Yeah.
And then what happens with each of those. Typewriters, manual typewriters, those are great.
I have this thing for like archaic mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now a little while back, I got a Winder pocket watch. Just for myself, just because it gives you something, because it winds down a little bit, so you gotta wind it up a little bit during the day, keep it on time, and
it's called Wonder.
It's like a pocket watch, but like if you look at it, the pocket watch I have, about three of those together is a cell phone.
How do you mean?
Because it's so old, like it's a pocket watch. And it's a little bit smaller than a cell phone. So it kind of reminds me how far technology has come, because now we have microcomputers in our hands.
Yeah.
And it's happened like that almost.
But with
our stair-step evolution as a species. And same with typewriters. We don't have typewriters. They're obsolete now. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to hear that clonk, clonk. It's a whole experience.
It's like there are all these different technologies, and they don't have to go away from us, like the archaic technologies.
Yeah.
We can just keep thinking about them differently. What's our experience of them?
How far does it have to go back to be archaic now in high technology?
Yeah.
Not very far.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our past is just right there behind us now.
Yeah.
Because we're in the future now. Like, Gene Roddenberry, the flip phones, those came from somebody had it in his mind. Mm-hmm. So they're like, people took that concept, and that's how we got our first flip phones. The doors that go like that, that came from Star Trek.
Oh.
So he kind of set a mold in people's minds by writing and coming up with his own vision for things.
Can you describe what... How do the doors move?
Wait. Just like when you walk into the store.
So they like slide, the auto slide.
Yeah, the old Star Trek.
Because it's like horizontal. I'm just thinking it's like a different kind of book, you know?
Yeah, it is. It guides you off into your next space. Like when you walk in the store, you're on the street and you're into a different environment.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, I think about like, we're both involved with Street Roots and how, you know, it's so interesting working with a paper newspaper like that.
Yeah.
It's like the analog or the vinyl record.
It is kind of. And so having the vendors out there takes it all the way back to the paper boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what do you think about that in terms of what you're saying with the archaic technologies and
it seems to work
present.
Because people are going through their days, and it gives them that, especially important in Portland, that person that they can interact with. And most of the newspapers that are the free ones out there are just ads for stuff, kinda. Whereas Street Roots, it's pretty much filled full of information, like a newspaper's supposed to be, not a big advertisement for stuff.
I'm so struck, Jason. I mean, our conversation has been really fun for me because I just realized we have this through line of things that cycle back on themselves but are different.
Yeah.
Because of time and other things.
Before Street Roots brought the paper boy back on some level.
And then there's a kind of vibrancy to that when you take it into a different time.
Yeah.
Like the archaic quality is reinvigorated.
Yeah, because it gives it a chance to look at itself.
Yeah. It gives it a chance to look at itself.
Yeah.
I mean, that it just thinking
kind of
about
us as a people.
Mm-hmm.
Say, like, you're an artist too. Mm-hmm. And so you probably visualize and conceptualize stuff different being an artist and a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're looking through that reference point pretty much with whatever you do. And when you think back on things, as you get further ahead, you're still looking through that lens of maybe taking a little bit of a viewpoint or have a different viewpoint or having an open mind about things.
I realize like part of it for me about as a way of living is I do love to be surprised. I was just, you know, thinking about getting to sit down and talk with you this morning. I started reading what the poet that I think really opened things up for me is this Peruvian poet who I read in translation, Cesar Vallejo. Excuse me. And one of the things I love about him is every word surprises me. So he would do these lists like, you know, Thursday, humorous bone, loneliness. Yeah, so I'll open up his books and just be surprised again and again. And I think, you know, again, maybe returning to Street Roots.
Yeah.
It's people surprise me every day.
I know. Because the thing I like about Street Roots is that it gives you a chance to meet everybody, because, like, say out in St. John's, people are going to the stores, like the whole neighborhood, you're out there, and so the whole neighborhood, kind of, after you've been there, gets to know who you are as a person.
So it's building.
Like, yeah, like, because you're building a little reputation for yourself. Because as a street person, you don't have much status, but it gives you a chance to build a little bit, because you've got some folding money in your pocket, you've gotten to know your neighbors, and then you can just pop in the store and get yourself something to eat, or take care, maybe you need a little bit of money to make that rent, or something like that, so it fills in the gaps nicely, and it reintroduces you back into a community again.
So are there some people that you get to know over time that buy the paper? So you're building a relationship?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because eventually you're going to be there for... Like, I know Scotty from St. John's.
Mm-hmm.
He's been out there for years, and so everybody knows who Scotty is.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's the street roots vendor. Pretty much out in St. John's. And so, it gives you that chance to do something for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I've been working on other ways, because it taught me that first lesson. Because there for a while, especially when I got here, I was kind of unsocialized, and so it gives you that chance to. Because if you have a scowl on your face and you're all frowny mean, nobody's going to buy that paper.
I'm just thinking about some of the other threads of our conversation and how it's like by having something that's the same, the street corner, you showing up.
Yeah.
But then other things are in flux.
Yeah.
And how you build and you grow and it changes over time and it gains its own kind of, I guess, meaning.
Yeah, and kind of momentum, I guess, too, because...
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm just thinking about the word even status that you said earlier, and I don't that we could unpack that for days, couldn't we?
Like, yeah,
that's a complicated one.
Yeah,
but it's like one of these things that we have between us as humans, like how we're.
It's not even a race issue; it's a status issue.
Hmm.
Like, yes, there's race and stuff involved, but a lot of that has to do with status anyway. And how... You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm
just... Like, when you're on the streets, everybody's kind of the same. I mean, they might tribe up a little bit, but we're all having to do the same stuff and suffer through the same difficulties, so on some level it makes us all the same. And there's something that you learn out on the streets, because you don't have very much. It gives you a certain kind of gratitude that you didn't have. Because everything that you have is way more valuable.
What are some of the things that you're grateful for?
Huh. Well, I've got this new apartment now. I've got a community garden plot. I've been doing lots of social advocacy, especially around the homeless issue. And I guess I'm proud and grateful for that because I've been willing to step up and take things to the next level, because I didn't stop or whatnot, I kept trying to do something. If it didn't work, I tried something different.
That trying and trying that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Who is it? Alan Watts has the saying of 7 times down, 8 times up, like a weeble wobble.
Yeah.
So I've kind of tried to take that one on for myself.
I love that. The Weeble Wobble's pretty awesome. Do they still make those?
I don't even know.
I remember playing with those. I was a child of the 70s.
Yeah.
So. I did a project.
Weeble Wobbles, they don't fall down.
Yeah, that was their slogan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I did this project. I always have loved poetry as a way of moving into things I don't understand. And so I love, I think I've always kind of mixed journalism with poetry. And I interviewed an activist, Lloyd Marbet, who had worked for years on activism around nuclear plant sightings in Oregon.
Yeah.
And so we did this whole, I tried to tell the story of his activism through a series of poems. Yeah. And at the end of the poem, let me see if I can just flip to it. It's called So I Raised My Hand, by the way, which I love because he was in a hearing early on.
Oh, cool.
And someone said, who's going to, I don't know, testify or do the next thing. And he looked around. No one raised their hand. Yeah. They said, so I raised my hand. And I thought about, that's so incredible, right? Because that's often what it takes. You raise your hand.
Yeah. And you ask a question.
Yeah. Yeah. You just keep moving forward. But I ended this poem. I would take language he said and rework it, and we did it together. And I end the poem with, every time they lost, every time they lost, every time they lost, every time more powerful than before. Because they kept having defeats, with activism. And then they finally actually blocked Trojan through their activism.
Yeah.
From citing the, or they shut down the nuclear plant. And that was so powerful to me, as he would say, we kept losing, Oh, but we got more powerful.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, oh, wait. We did it.
Yeah.
It's that trying and trying and trying, and it.
And all of a sudden, you're like, I did it, and it feels kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's like all the need to try went away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then think about, we have this shape of a life that each of us gets, and just the fact that we just keep trying. Stuff goes awry, but sometimes it just works out in beautiful ways,
well,
too.
Well, maybe it had to work out that way. Maybe it was somewhere in the roughness that we learned how to refine ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love the examples you gave. Your apartment, the community garden, the advocacy. Each feels very different and adds up to something beautiful, like the place that you have to take care. Well, I don't want to interpret it, actually. I mean, how would you say apartment, garden, advocacy? If thinking of a Cesar Vallejo list, Thursday humor's bone, loneliness.
Well, I'm trying to get my humor back. Been trying there for a while. It was all about trying to keep my head above water, and now that I'm standing on dry land, it's trying to figure out where I'm at now and figure out what the next thing I'm supposed to do is, because I'm not a lazy person. I wouldn't have gotten here if I was lazy. I got here because I kept trying and trying again. And so, just having that what do I do next so I can do the next right thing? Because it feels like that's what got me here in the first place. It's that trying to do the next right thing.
It's like the weeble wobble ceases to be a good metaphor, because when the weeble wobble finally gets stability, it's like, well, come on.
Yeah.
Start walking.
Yeah. Pretty much. So it's like, I like that, because now it's like I'm having to grow a set of legs.
Yeah.
So I can...
Yeah.
Wow. How cool is that?
That is really cool. Jason, can we high five?
We sure can.
Because I feel like we got somewhere with this conversation that I did not begin the day with, and I love that.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Yeah. What are you proud of?
Well, I'm proud of, I'm trying to think of how to respond to that. I mean, love is a big thing in my life, and any kind of relationships involving love, and then having cultivating that love for people. Like, one of the things, I mean, I could talk about, you know, like my daughter, who I'm very proud of, as she's in, just as a person, just, you know. But I also think, you know, going back to the art and the poetry, I've always just really been interested in how do we love the stranger.
Yeah.
And so I think it's that kind of commitment to that I sometimes completely fall off that track, right? And I can get caught up in the petty moments, because we all can, and that's part of what makes it kind of delightful that we're so flawed, you know? But with all those flaws, how is love just continually this force that we're taking care of?
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly how that connects to being proud of something, but it feels like it does.
Yeah.
I think, you know, my father, he died when I was 20. And I think that when that happened, I became really both kind of like not in a rush exactly, but life just felt really urgent, you know, like the sense that I really wanted to make the most, in a really unconventional way, of the fact that I've been given a life.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know when it would end, and it might be really long. So there's that sense. And I never really lose that feeling. And I mean, I think that there's, you know, I'm probably not too alone in that sense of just like, this is something, this is pretty, this is awful and pretty cool at the same time, life. So I was thinking about like this one poem that I closed the very first collection of poetry I wrote, Interval. Actually, Interval comes from this idea of like that space in which we have to act.
Yeah.
Like, got the, you know, we can learn from the past. We're always working for the future, but it's the, how do we act ethically in the interval?
Yeah.
And I close this book with this little tiny poem, aside from the coroner's verdict or the slow down, wind up piracy of time. Live on. Live skull near and on, and live on. And I think that skull near, right? Like living skull near, you know, it's almost feels cliche to say as a poet, like that relationship to death. But I think there is a way in which there's something very vibrant, right, about the fact that we got to take care of this interval, this space that we have.
Yeah, because somehow, like, for me, me and my environment are the same thing in that I'm picking up cues from my environment. So I'm getting, if I'm in, like, say, the studio, I'm picking up different cues and having a different experience than at the grocery store or at my house or someone else's house.
Or your garden.
Yeah, or the woods.
The woods.
So, somehow we, depending on what environment we're in, we change as people a little bit.
And then when I think people start planning spaces for people in poverty and
yes.
act like they people should live, be able to live anywhere.
Well,
you know, environment matters to people, right?
Yeah, because on some level, as a homeowner, those people, they're just in tents. That's their environment that they pay a lot of money for, looking like it's getting messed up. Mm. And so it becomes about their environment getting messed up instead of about the people that are in the tents.
Well, that's really interesting. And how has that shifted?
Yeah.
How do people see
the homeless?
Yeah.
Do they see them as urban detritus?
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of radical shift where, like, if people have to come to terms with the fact that if they are seeing them that way.
That's,
what does that mean?
They see that street root spender. That's their kind of view into the streets, because they know that person needs a hand up, and they're able to, because they know that person, be like, instead of giving your money to a charity and it trickling down to whoever, you can just hand it right directly to that person.
Human relationships.
Yes. There's no middleman in that, yeah. Really. It's from here to there. And it's not like the person is sitting there with a sign saying, give me money or weed so I can go and buy alcohol or something like that with. It's, here's some information that can stimulate your mind. I bought it. I'm going to sell it to you for more than I paid for it. And we both get something out of the exchange. Mm-hmm.
And then it's sort of, I mean, I'm thinking about the exchange as one person encountering another person on a street corner, how you're talking about that idea of the newsboy, which I'm always kind of playing with too. I mean, every Friday I dress a little bit like a newsboy, just because it's our new paper Friday. I always put a cap on, you know, because yeah. I do love just evoking that, because it's about that public sphere, right? That like when you're out there, you're holding something very, very important. You're holding the fact that relationships between strangers can evolve,
yeah,
in the public sphere.
Well, because it almost has to happen that way, because as a street person, you're in the public eye all the time. Like, the only time that you have to yourself is that time when you zip your tent.
So you're,
because you're
public.
Standing in line usually somewhere waiting for something to happen, or you're waiting for, like, a lot of things that happen, you're sitting there waiting. But at least with street roots, you're sitting there waiting with a reason, and you're trying to be self-sufficient. You're working on self-sufficiency. And then you're not in a line waiting for a handout. You're sitting there doing your job. It becomes a job. You get to manage your money. Well, microfinancing.
Mm-hmm. The best, the most local of economies, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of life is lived in public.
Yes. And so, in a lot of ways, on the streets, you see a lot of stuff that maybe you wouldn't have seen, and so it's different when you can drive by it in your car.
Are there... I'm just thinking, like, the insights that you glean, what form do they take, and how do you act as messenger? Like, if someone... Like, for me, living in a house, not living in that tent, yeah, how does the message, right?
Yeah. How does that get...
It's a lot of responsibility to put it back on the person living in public, right?
Yeah, it's on every individual vendor. They get to have their own message.
Mm-hmm.
Like... Because they get to meet that individual as a person. And it takes that cardboard cutout image away and makes that person three-dimensional again. Somehow. Huh. And somehow it makes everybody whole in the process. Because giving feels really good. And being able to offer somebody the chance to be able to give kind of feels good too, because giving and receiving are kind of the same thing in the exchange when it's a win-win situation.
That's really interesting. Can you say a little more?
Because, like, when you give something away, you get to feel good. Like, I'm helping, and that, so you're receiving something out of it. And of course, the other person's got their money in their hand, but they just transferred that dollar bill, that energy of the dollar bill, to a paper energy. So there's something happening in the process. It wasn't something for nothing.
And then thinking, that's, I never thought about that before, like it can be an exchange of paper.
Yeah.
And then one signifies a kind of power, like money, you know, paper is standing in for what, gold,
yeah,
whatever. And then the newspaper is knowledge, language, like what you're providing.
Yeah. Money is a form of power. It's a currency.
Mm-hmm.
And knowledge is power in, like, because I can leverage my time to get money, and that's kind of what happens with street roots a little bit. Is for me, they say that time is the or I kind of have this thing that time is the master resource.
Mm. How so?
Well, because you give up your time to go work, and then you get a paycheck, so you're transferring your hours for another form of currency that then you can go out and buy things with.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about your stopwatch, your pocket watch.
Yeah. And I'm sure you had that thing with me today.
Well, and then even like the thing that's tracking time, you have to, you give more time to, because you're, yeah, winding it, and you know.
It's kind of, they used to call them affections, like what a cane, it? Or a scarf, or a,
oh, yeah,
pocket watch.
Yeah. A little style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about time. Like, for me, you know, that... actually, that poem I just read, I had the... what was it? The slow down, wind up, piracy of time. And I think that when I'm really working on my poetry and art, I can often play with time in a slow down way.
Yeah.
And now with Street Roots, it's more of the wind up way,
yeah,
because I move at a really fast tempo right now. And I lose things in that because I'm losing the way of relating,
yeah,
at times. But I also really appreciate that I can just be aware it's just a really different tempo. And I'm speeding up because I want Street Roots to be strong because it's so beautiful.
And it does so many things for so many different people.
Yeah.
I think my favorite thing about it is I got to go in there and have a cup of coffee in the morning. Mm-hmm. And just that simple cup of coffee, just to get yourself back into the game, and maybe a fresh pair of socks, mm-hmm. or say if you need a comb or a toothbrush or some deodorant, it's right there because it's part of helping you keep your appearance up and your hygiene up so that you can go and sell more papers, because then you're more approachable and it's still that resocialization aspect. Because, say, the Street Roots office, that's a thriving community right there of people that know each other and are some level looking out for each other. Like, and keeping an eye on things. Because on some level, where they sell their papers, they take ownership of that area and make sure that trash is picked up and that. So, it kind of, I don't know, it's a beautiful symphony of lots of things going on at once.
Beautiful symphony of lots of things going on at once. Do you, when you're out there, do you feel a responsibility for other vendors, like, that you're representing something that affects other vendors?
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel like now I'm on this different level of doing something to help. Like, I feel like I'm a representative of Street Roots. And so I have to have a different level of responsibility for myself. And I really enjoy the poetry aspect because it's bringing some light and some beauty to something that is dark and ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're describing, like,
because that's where the poetry is coming from. Because most of the poets are off the streets, mm-hmm. and vendors. Mm-hmm. So it's coming out of their everyday experience.
And we're all stewarding language.
Yes. I mean, because paper's the written form. This is the spoken form. It's all been about the words or something. Mm-hmm. That's how come we've come so far as a species. It's our ability to keep and transmit knowledge to each other. And now it's happening so fast. You don't even have to go someplace to get that knowledge. You can sit in the park with your tablet or your cell phone. Or you can go on Facebook and mm-hmm. surf, or you can play a game, or you can check what the weather is going to be like for your trip to New York. Or,
yeah, different speeds again.
Yeah.
Just thinking about that with language being something that's so much about relationship, right? That we need to be able to communicate with each other. And then when we do it with poetry, we try to do it in a way that maybe throws people off kilter, maybe brings beauty.
Yeah. Like, it's, I don't know. My favorite author is Stephen King, and I like Stephen King because he paints pictures with words. So that when you're reading it, somehow it's a visualization process in your head.
So he has a pipeline to the imagination.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Huh.
Like, he's not the only one, but yet it's Stephen King, so. And part of what I like about him is he'll give you a character, make you fall in love with it, set through a whole bunch of terrible things, and then hopefully he'll survive it in the end.
Yeah.
Him or her. And so you've got to travel with this character kind of like your life experiences mm-hmm. on some level. I ran into somebody on the mats yesterday, and they were like, Portland is like purgatory. And I'm like, well, for me, it feels like Groundhog Day, kind of. And so when he got off, I'm like, well, I'd rather have Groundhog Day than purgatory.
Well, and then you said earlier, you know, when we keep cycling back on the same thing, we're not the same person.
Yeah.
So that's why maybe the Groundhog's Day is all right.
Because through the movie, he, even though it was happening the same, and he got to go this way, meet up with this person
yeah.
one day, and then, but eventually he learned his way out of the little thing. And so it's like when I walk down the street, I'm getting, especially where I live now, I meet different people and I get to, but I meet the same people and I get to know and grow. And I really love my neighborhood right now. Hey, Kaya, could you please bless us with one more poem?
Oh, that's such a nice way to say it, Jason.
Thank you.
I'm
having fun today.
I am too. I love this conversation. Well, these are poems I embroidered. So they're the poems, the kind of, I did these big black panels, actually.
Yeah.
So what I wrote them when I was working in archives at the City Archives, looking at a lot of these surveillance documents that the Portland police had kept on activists. So it was a really unusual file. I think I was struck again by like the people that raise their hand, the people that decide they're going to, you know, take risks and have really difficult courage in various ways. So this is the third of a little, what I call triptych. They're black linen panels embroidered with black cotton thread. So you need light to be able to read them. And this is called A Fire with Purpose. In the bright threat of attention, the surefire glare of recognition, you became a public person, mindful of those who live down river and down wind from the malice of power, downtrodden by disregard, upbraided by rancor. For them, you, heart sure, a fire with purpose, you became a public person. I was thinking of
Thank
a lot of people.
For that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the people I was really thinking of is Kent Ford, who's co-founded the Black Panther Party chapter here in Portland. And
cool.
They did a lot of amazing things, the Breakfast for Children program, dental clinic, medical clinic.
Yeah.
And he suffered a lot. I'm so grateful that he gets celebrated and he's still, you know, vibrantly in our community. But I think of him and a lot of people who have had to struggle and suffer for trying to act out of, I would say, a real space of love. Love for the stranger, love for other people.
Yeah. So, you inspire me, but what inspires you?
I'm inspired by, I think, going back to that sense of a little that Skolnir way of living. I'm inspired by having this life matter.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Well, I mean, since we both have talked about this place we love, Street Roots, I'd like to add the fact that we have a lot going on at Street Roots, where we've been around for 20 years, and the whole time we've been about newspaper, the vendors, advocacy, helped co-found Dignity Village in the beginning in year 2000, so 19 years ago.
Wow.
So we've been doing so much work, and now we're working on a plan that comes from all of those three pieces, vendors, newspaper, advocacy, Portland Street Response. So we're working on a plan for non-police first responders for the city. So anyone who wants to get involved with that, portlandstreetresponse.org.
Yeah.
And in our 20th anniversary, we're actually going to have a street party, Street Roots Street Party in Old Town on August 17th. Turn out for it because we want it to be houseless and housed, all having a festive, fun party. Huh. We are looking for sponsorships, so also get in touch with us if, as an organization, you're able to do that. But we're gonna have a little fun together.
Cool. So, is there any other social media hashtags or anything?
Street Roots is really, has a big presence, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all just looking for us as Street Roots. And we love for anyone to spread the word, because really we are sustained by people who buy the paper and then people who also donate to Street Roots. That's really how we're able to keep it all going. And going strong because we've been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah.
And then personally, my Twitter hashtag, my Twitter handle, is it's M Kaya Sand. So
cool.
Just an Amazon Marjorie.
Cool.
Kaya, KAIASAND.
Okay. And this is Jason Kirk, and we're sitting at KBOO Portland. Up in the studios. We're about ready to take off for the day. I hope you've all enjoyed Street Roots Poetry Showcase. And have a wonderful day, everyone. Stay blessed.
Thank you, Jason. You're incredible.
Thank you.